Ohio State fans are dealing with a not-so-fun defeat at the hands of Clemson right now, and it seems like a good time to just talk generally about how sports fans cope with their beloved team losing. So where do we start here? At the bar?
Well, maybe at the bar, maybe just in my living room. If you're going to open by talking about how sports fans cope and go with Ohio State, then we might as well talk about how I'm coping with the Ohio State loss and how our family is coping with the Ohio State loss. It's funny because at the end of the day, sports fans don't have to do what they do, right? I mean, it's not like if they stop following sports that their paycheck is going to be different or that their family members will disown them. It's a voluntary activity. It's been described as the activity that means absolutely nothing, but yet means absolutely everything to these individuals. And so when the team struggles, they've got to figure out a way to get past that, or they're not going to be able to follow the team again. I mean, part of sports losing, I mean, it's a losing endeavor for half the people out there. It's a zero-sum game. And so for sports fans, losing is inevitable. You're going to lose. So how you bounce back from that will dictate, whether or not you can keep going as a fan.
I've rarely heard of sports fans quitting their team because of a loss. So in general, fans must have a way of successfully working through these emotions and these losses. So what's a healthy way to approach this?
Yeah, I think that, humans in general have figured out ways to cope, and sports fans as a group have perfected ways to cope. And there's so many different things that sports fans will do to ultimately make the loss okay. I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to get to the point where they're enjoying the loss or they're glad for the loss, but they'll make it okay. So, for example, they're very good at sort of altering cognitively and perceptually their impression of what happened and what went down. A great example would be the New Orleans Saints fans, who once again find themselves on the wrong end of a very questionable interference call. So one thing that fans do is they can change their attributions or their causes, their beliefs anyway, about the causes of the outcome. So for Saints fans, it's very easy to blame the NFL or to blame the officials. When the team loses, it's somebody else's fault. It's not my own team's fault. It's somebody else's fault. When my team wins, well, it's because we're good or we're successful. They internalize the team's successes. They'll externalize the team's failures. If your favorite team loses in a championship game, it's very easy to say, well, the other team played over their head. It's not that we were performing poorly, but the opposition did something that was extraordinary. Another thing that sports fans are very good at is beliefs and curses. It's not my team's fault. It's this, magical or mysterious element out there that's responsible for what's going on. Baseball fans historically are really good at curses, beliefs and curses. So you have the curse of the Cubs, and then of course, the Red Sox were supposedly cursed forever because of selling Babe Ruth. That curse goes way, way, way back with the Bambino. And it's interesting that what sports fans are doing by believing in these curses is basically saying it's not the team's fault. It's something above the team. It's not that we blame the players. We're not going to blame the coaches. We couldn't help it. We're cursed. It's way easier to say that the Red Sox are cursed, and that's why they lost the 86 World Series. That's easier to say as a fan than to say, well, I have no idea why our manager would leave, the immobile Billy Buckner out there at first base, or why would our manager leave a obviously tired relief pitcher in the game? It's easier to blame the curse because then it takes the pressure off the individual. And then the last very common curse is pessimism, where sports fans will, as the game gets closer, they'll decrease their expectation of success. We actually started looking at this about 12, 14 years ago, and I read some research that found that college students, as a test gets closer, will decrease their expectation of what they're going to get on the test. So like 3 months out, what are you going to get in this test? A. A month out, a B. A week out, a C. A day before, well, I might pass. Because then whatever you do, you feel better about, right? So if I say I'm only going to get an A and then you get a B, it looks so good. So we thought, well, maybe sports fans do the same thing. And we went with Cardinals baseball fans and asked them about 3 months before the start of the season, a month before, a week before, and the day of, how many games they thought the team would win. Sure enough, it went down, down, down. That's basically proactive coping, right? That's coping before the bad event has actually happened. And then there's retroactive pessimism, where sports fans, after the loss, essentially say, well, now that I think about it, we never really had a chance. A colleague and I, Rick Reeve at Western Kentucky, we looked at this a few years ago, and we asked Murray State basketball fans and Western Kentucky basketball fans a day before a game against the two rivals who they thought would win. And, of course, everybody said they thought their team would win. And then a day after the game, which Murray State had won, we asked the fan bases again, who did you think was going to win? And the Murray State fans were like, well, I knew we were going to win. Like I said before, we're going to win. But the Western fans, they all said, well, you know, now that I think about it, Murray State was 7-1 coming into this game. They were on a really good roll. I don't really think we had that much of a chance. They are going back in time cognitively to make the loss okay.
Other than losses, what other types of sports situations do fans have to cope with?
Certainly when there's an injury to a favorite player, or if a favorite player gets traded to another team, or even worse than that, if the favorite player, you know, through free agency, all of a sudden signs on for the rival. I always think of Roger Clemens moving from the Red Sox to the Yankees. These are losses that are also felt, right? Because when you identify with a team, you don't just identify with the names on the front of the uniform. You also can identify with the names on the back, and they become a part of your family, your extended family, so to speak. And so fans have to figure out a way to make it okay to either root for part of the rival team or to convince themselves that they don't like that player anymore. And that's a pretty rough cognitive dissonance spot to be in. But I think that aside from dealing with a loss, the biggest thing fans have to cope with would be when the team up and leaves, right? When the team moves, or for whatever reason is shut down, there's, you know, some type of contraction in a sport and they eliminate a couple of teams. I think about minor league baseball right now and the fact that on the horizon there are dozens and dozens of minor league teams that probably are going to go away as Major League Baseball is trying to begin some cost-cutting activities. Certainly you don't get identification with minor league teams the way you do major league teams, but people that live in those towns still feel that that team is a part of who they are and certainly a part of their community. So when that team leaves, how are you going to handle that threat to your identity, which is not just, well, we lost, okay, so I'll figure out a way to feel better about tomorrow's game, or our season is over, we were terrible this year, that's okay, we have the first pick in the draft, so we'll get better next year, I can cope that way. But when the team is completely gone, that's when it's very, very difficult for fans to cope. And they often do so by finding another almost surrogate team to latch on to. Okay, my team is gone, my choices are stop being a sports fan or finding somebody else to root for. And, you know, they'll find somebody else to root for.
Well, what happens in situations like, I think about Houston. The Oilers went to Nashville and they became the Titans. And so then what about Houston fans that suddenly became Titan fans, but then the Texans come to Houston? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, and one that sort of hits home. One of my very, very good friends and colleagues is from Houston, Ryan Zapalak, and he is such a huge Houston sports fan and was a, you know, diehard follower of the Houston Oilers before they became the Titans with a one-year stop at Memphis. And he absolutely despises anything related to the Titans, right? Because he sees, you know, when I believe it was Bud Adams that chose to move the team, and there's actually a picture like almost like the Hall of Fame along the walls at the Titan Stadium. There's a picture of Bud Adams knew his name, and I took a picture of it and sent it to Ryan when I was at the game a couple of weeks ago with my sons, and he wrote back something that's not appropriate for air, and there's no love lost there. So I think in those scenarios, they don't follow the team because they see the team as somehow being a traitor. But again, it's not that Ryan necessarily and fans like him hate the Titans. They hate the owner, right, for moving the Titans than the Oilers. And so now he's, you know, a huge fan of the Texans. Lucky for them, something came along and replaced it. Someone could fill that void by a new team. Those that don't have that new team, they're stuck out there like sports fandom limbo.
What other interesting aspects of fandom coping have we not discussed so far?
I think the one final point that warrants mention is that this stuff works. That their research is very clear that not only do fans cope to make themselves feel better, when they cope, it does make themselves feel better. So they've looked at individuals after sporting events, fans that have watched their team fail at an event, and they've assessed how much they use various types of coping strategies, and then looked to see if their self-esteem and their outlook on life rebounded. And the more they use a coping strategy, sure enough, the better they felt about themselves afterwards. So it's not just that we're, you know, grasping at straws here. These straws actually work. And when you use these coping strategies, they do make yourself feel better. And then that allows you to say, okay, you know, tomorrow's another day or next year's another season.